So now we will proceed to agenda item two, which is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Dr. Raul Ruiz for Congress A19-03. And we have for our audit, Mr. William Ants and Kendrick Smith in the Audit Division.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, the ADRM, on Dr. Raul Ruiz for Congress, which was submitted to the Commission for consideration on January 8, 2021. The ADRM provides the audit staff's recommendation for each finding outlined in the draft final audit report. There are two findings. Finding one is a misstatement of financial activity. Finding two is a personal use of campaign funds. We are available to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair, I have some questions. I'm just trying to find my notes here real quick.
It's okay. Take your time, Commissioner Trainer.
We have two documents on this, right? That we're looking at, two agenda documents on this, an A and a B.
Is that to audit division? Or are you asking me, Commissioner Trainer?
Yeah, I'm asking audit division. Yeah.
There are two documents. There's the ADRM that was submitted, and then at request of the commission, we also submitted the committee's draft final audit report response.
Right. Can you walk me through what their response was and why it is, why it takes a different tack than what audit put forward?
Well, their response is summarized in their.
Yeah, they're not here to explain it, so I just kind of would like your take on their submission.
Okay. Well, yeah, as I said, we've put their response in the audit, in the draft final audit report.
I know I'm having to log into VPN to find it real quick. So this is the problem with not having VPN up and running when you're online. So
I think in this environment, we have to choose connectivity or access. And so in this one,
right,
you chose connectivity. Would you like to take a recess so we can give some time for that?
If you could, that would be great. That way I can.
That'd be fun.
I'm just trying to log in right now so I can pull up the document. So
I understand. We're going to. Well, to no rush on that. We'll take 15 minutes, I think, with the day, the morning we've had. Everybody can, as I said, we'll close meeting. Now you have time to get some water, maybe get a snack even. You've missed lunch, so let's take 15 minutes, please. We'll reconvene the meeting back at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We are reconvening the meeting now. At our last break, I believe, Mr. Trainer, you had some questions for the audit division. Would you like to proceed?
Yes, I hope I don't have an echo now that I have the VPN up, but if I do, y'all let me know. So questions for the audit division. In looking at the response, it's very clear from the memorandum that OGC put out that the log requirement that's in 113.1GA in the regulations extends from a 2002 rulemaking. And going back and looking at that rulemaking, 2001-3, we specifically said that that's what the rulemaking was based upon. And that rulemaking dealt specifically with a log requirement for campaign purchased vehicles. And here we're dealing with the purchase of gas and parking So how are we taking and applying a rulemaking which specifically is based on one very narrow set of circumstances, which is the purchase of a vehicle, and applying it to a broad set of circumstances, that being the purchase of fuel and parking and other things of that nature? And what notice have we given to the regulated community that we're going to require this type of log requirement beyond what we said we were looking at in the rulemaking?
Madam Chair?
Of course, go ahead, Ms. Brown.
I believe we would defer to our colleagues in OGC on this question.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. The question of the log requirement specifically and an extension of the AOU cited is actually not what our analysis is, and we do not believe that is what the auditors have done here. At issue in this audit are not campaign purchased vehicles. Instead, these are cars owned by committee staff, and the committee paid for expenses associated with the use of those vehicles for campaign purposes. Cite the 1995 explanation and justification, which expressly states that the personal use provisions apply to vehicles owned by any personally owned vehicle. I'm just looking for the exact language. The use applies to the use of campaign funds for expenses associated with any vehicle, regardless of whether it is owned or leased by the committee or the candidate. Because the expense is associated with a personal vehicle, which is at issue here, usually exists irrespective of the candidacy or the office holder duties, the use of campaign funds for these expenses will generally be considered personal use. And that is why we believe the committee is on notice that these expenses are in fact personal use, given that the committee has not shown that the activity associated with the vehicles was that the campaign paid were not of a de minimis nature, that the staff did not reimburse those expenses, or that there was no contemporaneous record provided. It's not specifically about a log requirement, but rather that a contemporaneous record would assist the auditors in confirming the information that the committee has asserted. And in the absence of either...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madam Chair. So would not the report itself to the commission and a corresponding receipt and the description that the purchase of fuel or parking was for campaign purposes, would that not be a contemporaneous record?
It's not a record that the auditors can verify. The auditors can address this, but I don't believe that the committee provided any receipts or any other documentation, any vouchers or anything. I believe that there are.
But we did have a statement from the campaign manager that they were. Now, I don't know if that was under oath or affidavit or how it was put forward. And we do have the report to the commission of the expense that's what the expense was for. And we have no reason to believe that they lied on their report, do we?
We don't have any reason to believe, but I think this goes to the auditor's ability to verify the information that is in the report. The regulations at 104.14 A1 Oh, I'm sorry. I just got an echo. Requires that committees maintain records which shall provide in sufficient detail the necessary information and data from which the filed reports and statements may be verified, explained, clarified, checked for accuracy and completeness. And the declaration from the campaign manager does not allow the auditors to verify the reported information.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Holloway, please.
I don't think it's really just a question of whether or not it was just a campaign expense. What we're trying to determine here is how to divide the expense. If a personal vehicle is being used, let's say I take my Acura out for a spin, but I'm actually on government time. So the question becomes, how much of that was government related and how much of that was Lorenzo Holloway related? That's really what we're trying to determine here. So it's not just about, oh, is it a campaign expense? Did you purchase gas? Yeah, you can call it a campaign expense, but if I put $30 in my Acura, how does that split out between what I did for the campaign and what I did for Lorenzo Holloway personally? That's what we're talking about.
Well, and I think the opposite side of that same coin is how is Lorenzo Holloway harmed by the government's use of his Acura to go out and conduct government business, because you're putting mileage on your car and then you're going to turn around and be able to claim, you obviously you would be able to claim that as a work expense of some sort on your taxes, but yet you're not necessarily going to have a personal log of what type of wear and tear you have on your vehicle. So there's got to be some give and take in the rules here, where I don't think it's the case where you have somebody who shows up for a job at a campaign with a vehicle. And then we now, because I don't think the regulated community has been given any notice of this, that they need to write down the mileage the day that they start working for the campaign. And then they have to keep a personal log of all of the activities that they engage in a daily basis, whether it be driving around to put out yard signs, whether it be going to a press conference, whether it be going to a rally, whatever it may be. And they happen to put $20 or $25 worth of gas in their car. And I can't imagine a situation where the expense of gasoline, when we're talking about multi-million dollar campaigns, is not a de minimis expense in the overall cost of campaigning. I mean, having worked in campaigns before, looking at the expenses that you're making, I mean, look, the cost of the individual themselves and their salary is probably de minimis in consideration to the overall cost of the campaign. We spent $14.4 billion spent in the last election cycle. And here we're wanting to tag a campaign because they've got people putting $20, $30, and $40 worth of gas in their car without any type of notice from us, I believe. I mean, I believe that they're right, that we are applying a record-keeping logging rule that does not apply to the particular situation of gas and parking. And if they've made the statement under oath in their submission to us that that's what the expense was for, and we can't disprove that that's what the expense was for, then we have no reason to believe that the full $25 for gas didn't go to campaign activity. Does that make sense as far as the opposite side of what you explained?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. But also, I think we have to keep in mind that the way the system is set up, it's not about what the auditors can disprove. It's about what the committee can actually verify, what the auditors can verify with the committee's records. And that's what this is about, because the regulations specifically require, they file a report about an expense. They have to keep records so they can verify those reports. And if they filed a report saying that they had an X number expense for the campaign, then the auditors need to go out and verify that. So that's what this is actually about. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think a lot of requirements is pretty common. I mean, if I was running a business and I wanted a tax deduction and I'm going to claim a specific deduction based on travel expenses, I think the IRS may be interested in my records on that should I be audited. So I don't think this is anything new. This is not a new concept.
Well, let, Well, let me ask you this. Then why do we not have a site to any MER or an audit or an advisory opinion or any other authority that would report to apply to the 18-year-old log requirements to gas purchases when we cite to 11 CFR 13.1 G8 in the log requirement applying to gas purchases?
Well, there could be a lot of reasons for that. One, it may be a situation where committees are actually just not using personal vehicles. It could be a situation where committees are using personal vehicles, but they're keeping a log. It could be a situation where committees are using a personal vehicle, not keeping a log, but they just haven't been audited. So there's actually a lot of explanation of why we haven't seen that.
My question was, is that in the memo, the October 19th memo that OGC prepared, we don't have any citations to anything internally where the commission has either dealt with in a MER or in an audit or in an advisory opinion or any other authority, statutory authority, whatever it might be, that would report to apply the log requirement to gas purchases.
No, what I was saying, that was my point, that, you know, it just may not have come up, you know, because of the various factual situations I just laid out. It just may have never come up.
Well, so for that means this is a case of first impression then for us, right? That we're taking the 18-year-old log requirement and we're now going to apply it to gas purchases. This is going to be the first time that the commission is going to undertake this stance that you must have a log for gas purchases and for parking and the other associated activities in the use of a personal vehicle that doesn't belong to the campaign or to the candidate. This is a matter of first impression for us, correct?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you can go to a situation where agency hasn't applied the law maybe recently in a long time and just conclude that that's an issue of first impression. That's just a case of it never arose. That doesn't mean that the law shouldn't apply. You know, it's just that it just hasn't come up.
And Madam Chair, if I may, and I believe, again, the notice to the regulated community is the ENJ, which discusses the use of a personal vehicle. So the committee has noticed that some sort of record is required when an individual using a personal vehicle gets reimbursed or the committee pays for the expenses associated with that vehicle. That has been in existence since 1995. And it may be somewhat along the lines of what Lorenzo was saying, is that other committees have taken this forward and that it hasn't arisen to this level within an audit. But there is notice to the regulated community.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Trainor.
So Ms. Brown, if I could ask you, what would the committee have to produce in order to be able to justify these expenses as related to the campaign and not personal use? So if they had kept the receipt from the Exxon Mobil station that they purchased the gas from, would that be enough?
Madam Chair?
Please, Ms. Brown.
I would note that earlier in the audit process, this was actually a larger violation amount, and the committee was able to provide us with documentation sufficient to reduce the personal use violation. And so I would ask Mr. Antos if he would kind of walk us through or give us a couple of examples of what the committee provided to get us to where we are today.
That'd be great.
I'm just bringing up my spreadsheet here so I could give you some examples. As noted, the majority of these were expenses for gas at gas stations, and a lot of those there was just really no documentation that came with it.
Does that mean there's no receipt associated with it? So they paid cash for it with no receipt. So there's no bank record to show a transaction on a debit card or a credit card. I'm just trying to get at what type of information the committee could provide absent a log that would meet the requirements that we're trying to impose here.
Yeah, the ideal thing would be to have some type of a log or write some kind of mileage down that was the campaign expense portion. We've seen other committees when we've done similar reviews where they printed out the Google Maps to show this is the distance from A to B.
Okay. So let me take that then. So let's say they put $25 worth of gas in their car and they write down in the log that they've got 1,000 miles on the car, and then they drive 15 miles to help, you know, put out yard signs for a particular candidate. And that's what they have. So at the end of it, they have, they've gone 1,015 miles after they put gas in it. Is that enough? Or do you also have to have a receipt to go with it to be able to know what the cost of the gas is so that you can then do the correlation of how many miles they drove versus how far they've gone? I mean, this level of record keeping for a staff person on a campaign is something new for me. And I've worked in a lot of campaigns, and I've had a lot of people travel all over the place. So, you know, Texas is a big state, and we have it's a pretty large congressional district. So what information we're about to impose this rule on the regulated community based upon this audit. I want to have a clear understanding of exactly what it is that they need to have in order to not face the same type of finding.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Smith, please go ahead.
Commissioner Trainor, I can tell you some of the other documentation that was provided by the committee for expenses okay. that we were also looking at. For instance, they provided the candidate's itinerary, which would show like he had a political event in an area where he was, where there were lodging expenses. And so, you know, and that was even jotted in his itinerary. Also, we've seen other solicitations where the candidate was doing some type of political activity, and it would show on the solicitation that the candidate was going to appear. So those are some of the different types of documentation we were providing.
And I appreciate that. Thank you for that. And I fully believe that with regard to the candidate and the personal use requirement, those types of things are very necessary. But here we're applying it to other personnel associated with the campaign, basically out in the scope of their duties as a campaign worker, keeping these type of logs. And we're wanting to know when they're on the clock and when they're on some type of frolic and detour from being on the clock and when they're off the clock. And I think that point's made very specifically by the respondents here when they talk about while it's not an issue in this case, but they talk very specifically about how if we were to carry this ruling forward, it's going to apply to rental cars being used specifically by presidential campaigns where you have people all over the country who are traveling for various functions associated with the campaign. So I think this is a matter of first impression for the commission, and I want to make sure that I understand exactly where we're going if we're going to require campaign personnel to keep these type of logs. So they have to have a log of what the mileage was when they showed up. We've determined that. We need to know what the ending mileage was. Then I'm assuming we need to keep a receipt in order to put that in, to put that there. And that receipt has to match up with the amount that's reported to the commission.
Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Commissioner Drain, I think, if the committee would have maintained receipts, I think that is something we would have definitely considered. I don't know if it would have met the requirement, but we would have considered that. However, because they did not maintain any documentation at all, I think that was a problem for us.
Well, so why are we not tagging them for misreporting information to the commission? Because if they reported $25 of gas purchased at Exxon, and we believe that some of those funds were for personal use, which is what we're saying here in this audit, the $25 that was reported is incorrect on the report. It's not $25 that was spent. It should have been $15, and there should have been a reimbursement of $10, correct?
If I may, I think the personal use relates back to the E&J, which specifies when a personal vehicle is used. So while there may be an issue that the report regarding the reporting that they may not have reported the specific amount, the appropriate amount, it is still personal use because campaign funds were used for a personal vehicle. The committee has not shown that use was of a de minimis amount, that the owner of the vehicle did not reimburse the committee for that portion of their vehicle expenses that were associated with their personal use, it was not otherwise rebutted by a log or other record. Mm-hmm.
So that's my question. Why is audit not also finding that they misreported the expenditures for the gas in their report? Because they now have a reporting problem. One, they're missing a reimbursement. That should be an issue that comes up in the audit. And they've misreported the amount that the campaign actually spent. So the public's not informed as to the correct amount that's been spent. Again, if they've, just take my example again, if they spent $25 on gas, they drove 15 miles. So let's say that's $10 worth of gas that they used for campaign related activities. They got the benefit of $15 worth of gas for personal use. There should have been a reimbursement of $15 from the campaign employee to the campaign. And the campaign should have reported an expenditure of $10 for the gas for the travel. Is that correct? And if so, why is that not an issue? Why is that not showing up as an issue? Why are we only dealing with the personal use issue in the audit?
Yes, Mr. Ants.
Yeah, I'll try to explain that. Well, in your case where you're saying there was a $25 expenditure, maybe 15 was the personal part, we don't know that for sure. All we know is that there was a debit coming out of the bank for $25 that went to a certain gas station.
Actually, we don't know that because what I was just told is that we didn't have any evidence of that.
All we know is there were charges to these gas stations and there was nothing to support it. Why we didn't pursue that as record keeping, the record keeping threshold's a lot higher.
Okay. So Madam Chair, just for the benefit of my fellow commissioners, at the appropriate time on making motions, I am going to move to approve the first finding and exclude the second finding. I think this is a case of first impression for the commission. I don't think that we have given appropriate notice to the regulated community of the requirement for the staff of the campaigns to keep these type of logs. And that if we want to do something like that going forward, we need to make sure that we have some level of notice so that they can keep up with it. And frankly, it's one of those things that is so commonplace that it would require some sort of standardized form so that it would make it easy on us to be able to keep up with exactly how money is being spent. And again, you know, the cost of gas on a campaign that costs millions of dollars is by definition de minimis. And so for that reason, I'm gonna make a motion to exclude when it's time, but I'll let anybody else that has questions ask.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor. Any further questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the finding is well-founded. I think, you know, we've got, as counsel said, an E&J that goes back to 1995, and there's nothing particularly unusual about suggesting that receipts have to be kept if you wanna be reimbursed for expenses that you incur, in, you know, in connection with your personal vehicle. Having said that, I also think the first finding, you know, as we have in previous audits recently, you know, we've got another finding that's headed misstatement of financial activity, where the bottom line is that we're saying they didn't misstate financial activity. There was no material misstatement. So I think at a minimum, we're going to want to amend that heading on that finding so that it is not misleading. You're muted.
You're absolutely right on that.
I'm a little bit confused when I read the narrative. Is it that during the course of the audit, they came up with additional records or made amendments that demonstrated that what we had originally thought were misstatements were not material misstatements, or was it that we just were wrong that it was misstated in the first place?
Please go ahead.
We had a misstatement, and the committee provided evidence that some of the checks that we were considering outstanding were actually voided. So removing them from our bank numbers brought them under the threshold.
So, again, I'm a little unclear. So it wasn't it's not that they needed to amend their reports because they had misreported something. It's that we were reading something as a misstatement because we didn't know they had voided the checks. Is that what happened? I'm trying to figure out if there was ever a misstatement here.
There was a misstatement when we had the checks in our bank number, which made our bank number higher than the reported number to a material amount. But after we removed those, it came under, and there's no longer a misstatement. But we didn't take that into consideration until after the interim audit report was out.
Were the checks voided during the audit process or before the audit process, but they provided you with the evidence that they had voided them during the course of the audit process? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yes, they were voided, but we from the documentation we looked at, we saw a check register that they provided us that had the checks listed on there without any indication they were voided. So we
picked right, but when were the checks opinion. Voided?
Were the they checks were voided? They were voided at the time they were written.
At the time they were written. So it wasn't a response to the audit. It was voided at the time it was written. So correct. Was there ever, so it doesn't sound like there actually ever was a misstatement.
Well, yeah, you could look at it that way, I guess. We were considering it a misstatement because we were considering them outstanding checks. Because they didn't provide us any further documentation to show that they were voided at the time. It wasn't until after we already picked them up as outstanding, then they sent us an email showing that one check was actually voided and reissued and provided us the documentation for the reissued check.
I don't mean to interrupt it, but we have some very hurried hands up. So I'm going to ask if anyone else from audit would like to also join in. Mr. Smith, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Weintraub, we don't, when we reconcile the committee's bank activity, we always have questions. And so we go to the committee and ask the committee those questions and try to get those records to verify those final numbers we're unsure about. And so that's what we did in this process. We gave the committee several chances to provide this documentation or to provide an explanation to us, and they had not done that. And so that's why we went forward with the finding. And it wasn't until we had already gone forward with it that they came back, and then they said, well, we can give you further documentation now to demonstrate that these checks were actually void. But that's how it ended up as a finding, because no documentation had been provided to us to demonstrate otherwise.
I appreciate that we want people to provide us with all the documentation at the soonest possible moment. But I think the misstatement, the question is, was there a misstatement in the reports that they filed with the commission? Now, it sounds to me like what you're saying is, you thought there was a misstatement because you didn't know originally that they had voided these checks, which they had voided at the time. I mean, it would be different if they had voided them later and then needed to amend. But it sounds like you're saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that they never actually did misstate this information on their reports to the commission because the checks had been voided all along.
Ms. Brown, would you like to jump in?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Weintraub, so I would just highlight that the committee does still have a misstatement. However, it's now immaterial based on the additional information that they've since provided to us. So the committee still does have a misstatement. It's just immaterial.
But if we had known at the outset that these checks were voided, they never would have had this finding, because we don't generally issue findings about information that we do not consider to be material.
Correct. But I'm sorry, Madam Chair. it's a bit of a timing issue, right? So if we don't have the information at the time that we're writing the report, we move forward with the writing of the report. And so if we receive information subsequent to that that would reduce the finding to make it immaterial, it's the finding is already in the report. We would just state that the committee has resolved it to the extent that it is no longer material.
And my point is, if I may, Madam Chair, that there's a difference between somebody who misreported something in the course of the audit, they realize that and they fix it, they amend their reports, and then it would make sense to me to say, well, they did misstate, there is a finding that they misstated something to a material degree that we recognize, but they fixed it, they corrected it. That's what we had with a couple of audits last time where we had misstatement corrected. This doesn't sound like there was ever a material misstatement at all. We thought they were. I understand why you thought they were. I don't fault you for thinking that they were because you didn't have all the information in hand. But in fact, it does not appear that there was ever a material misstatement on the reports they filed with the commission.
I think that we would agree with that conclusion. However, I guess we're faced with the issue of it's now already made its way into the report. And so our past precedent has been, once we're in that stage, that we just articulate that the finding is not material.
But this is the point where the commission has to approve a report that says there's a finding. And I'm not sure I'm comfortable. You know, at first I thought maybe this is another one where we have to correct the heading so that it's clear that they fixed it. But now it appears to me that like I said, I'm not faulting you for it. I understand that you didn't have all the information and it looked like there was a misstatement, but we now know that there was not a misstatement. So I'm not sure that I, as a commissioner, feel comfortable voting to make a finding that they had a misstatement when they actually didn't.
So the I'm sorry, Commissioner Traynor, I see your mic is off. I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, no.
So the finding wouldn't be to the finding would be that there is no material misstatement. Let me also make this point, if I may, because it sounds like what would the alternative be? How would we otherwise articulate or not this information within the audit report? And I raise that because even in the case where we have a finding where commissioners, where we don't have four approvals, the matter isn't removed from the report. It still remains in the report. It's just moved to the additional issues section. So even in that case, we don't remove findings.
I get that, but I mean, it sounds like when we thought there was a misstatement, we were just wrong. And, you know, I don't know, I have a hard time as a commissioner approving a finding that, like I said, I had to read it a couple of times, try and figure out what was going on there myself. And until I came here and asked you these questions, I still wasn't 100% sure. And I think most people reading this report with this big headline that says misstatement of financial activity would assume that at least at some point, even if you read through and you say, oh, they corrected it, there's no longer a material misstatement. You know, I mean, I suppose we could have a finding that says no material misstatement. That might be that's our finding, that there was no material misstatement. Or we could, in fact, remove the finding. I have to say overall, just my overall reaction to this audit report is we need to, and those who've been around for a while know we've had these conversations before. We, I think, need to reassess our trigger thresholds for these audits, because we spent almost 2 years auditing this committee at substantial expense and devotion of resources, both to the commission and to the committee. And at the end of the day, you know, this is after an election cycle where $14 billion were spent. And at the end of the day, after a 2-year audit process, we're arguing about $5,000 in missing gas receipts. And it just seems to me that if we are not doing random audits, which, you know, the commission no longer has authority to do, and if we did have random audit authority, we would probably get a lot more reports that had minimal or no findings. But if we are supposedly auditing committees for some sort of cause, you know, it seems to me if this is what we're ending up with, we need to adjust our trigger thresholds, because it does not appear to me that this one was really worth everything that we and they went through in order to come to these conclusions. But I mean, that's not for that. That is a sort of an invitation to my colleagues to that we all need to think about these things as we are looking at audit thresholds for the next cycle.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair, please.
Two questions coming out of, the colloquies both my colleagues, I think, quite persuasively have held. The first is with regard to the gas receipts and such. Can someone, and this is an honest question, how is it possible that we have a quarter century year old regulation, and this is the first time this issue has come up, given that this seems like the sort of thing that would happen in literally every campaign over that period, or certainly the overwhelming majority of serious political contests? And whether we want to label that a question of first impression or it just doesn't come up before, like that, how? Honestly, like, just can someone explain that to me?
Madam Chair, if I may offer just a thought, it could be that in this particular audit, because it arose within the context of the personal use finding and a number of, I think all of the other personal use issues were resolved, this was what was remaining at the conclusion of all of the field work and, you know, post exit conference. Whereas perhaps in other contexts where there may be issues of gas expenses associated with personal use, it simply didn't rise to a certain dollar level, threshold level.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll have to give this some thought, but I will say it makes me feel very uncomfortable that there may be moving parts somewhere in the system if this is just such a basic issue has never come up before. Gives me a lot of pause. My second question is related to Commissioner Weintraub's questions, and maybe this is just taking up her invitation, but what do you guys down at audit need from us to feel comfortable taking a mistaken finding off the report? What needs to be done from your perspective for you to feel free to do that?
Go ahead, Ms. Brown.
Mr. Vice Chair, I think from our perspective, I'm getting disconnected from VPN. I hope you all can still hear me. Can you?
Yes, it's fine.
Okay. So from our perspective, we've presented a recommendation to the commission. And so in order for us to remove a finding from the report, it would of course take four votes from the commission. But I would just reiterate that this would be something different than what we've done previously, because we do have prior incidents where there were misstatements that were committee was able to provide documentation throughout the course of the audit after the misstatement was already presented in the audit report, where the commission concluded as a result of that, that there was no material misstatement. So at this point for us, we would just need direction from the commission.
I appreciate that. I'm asking a broader question.
Okay.
Discussions between lawyers and accountants are always especially fraught because, you know, we both have our parallel sets of use of the English language. They don't always line up. I'm asking as a matter of practice. I understand what we can do in this particular matter, but it seems to me there's a difference between this thing came up and we need the commission to make a call on whether we're going to adopt this position versus, no, this is just an error. Like we held a view. We now know that view was wrong, you know, like moral certainty, the evidence has come out to affirmatively disprove this. And if you were another part of the agency, you would probably reconsider the recommendation. What's broken in the system where that's not an option, where you can't come to us and say, we don't need you to vote on this because we saw the checks. This isn't a thing. We want it out of the record. We don't want there to be this ambiguity in these questions.
I guess my initial response might be that we would have to come up perhaps with parameters. What defines at what point we remove something from an audit report that has already been approved to some extent, right? Because at this point, we've had an interim audit report, we've had a draft final audit report, that both of which have gone to the committee, both of which have circulated to the commission in some fashion. And so we would need a way to explain, one, to the public, right, when something is removed from the report, because ultimately all these reports will appear online in kind of chronological order. And so for it to be removed, we would just need, perhaps this is getting into Directive 70, which is already part and parcel to this particular committee, and modifications to it to describe at what point something like this might be able to be removed from an audit report.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Holloway, please.
Yes, I absolutely agree with Dan. Directive 70 is the place to do something like that. And that is the directive that actually lays out the procedures in the audit report. So if you wanted a procedure where if something reached a certain level by the time that you got to the interim audit report or the final audit report, then you can just revise Directive 70. It could be done there.
And until we do that, you don't feel free to take those actions?
No, sir.
No, it's sincere questions. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Trainor.
Ms. Brown, is what Commissioner Weintraub is discussing, if we would have considered an interim audit report in an executive session, Would we have been able to remove it at that point and not have be dealing with it now in this audit report?
In the context of this particular RUES committee?
Yes.
No, because the information didn't come to us until after the interim audit report had already circulated and been provided to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for audit or the Office of General Counsel? I was checking Commissioner Traynor because it looks like he's looking.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. All right. So are there any motions? Commissioner Weintraub. I apologize, Commissioner Traynor.
That's fine. I'll let her go first because I'm going to vote with her on that. Depending on what she does, I may make another motion.
Actually, no, you're probably not going to vote with me because of the way I'm going to frame this. But, you know, okay. I think it still logically perhaps makes more sense for me to go first. I'm going to move approval of finding 2 in the as described in the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Dr. Raul Ruiz for Congress, A19-03. And the associated discussion in the draft final audit report.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Is there a discussion on this motion? Seeing no interest, I will call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, please say no.
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 The motion fails with 3 voting in favor, Commissioner Weintraub, Walter, and myself, and 3 voting against, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Traynor, please.
My motion would be to not adopt the recommendations in the audit report for Dr. Raul Ruiz for Congress, A19-03. And just to clarify, not adopt 1 or 2 based upon Commissioner Weintraub's discussion of the problems with 1 and the issues that I see with issue 2 being a matter of first impression. So that's my motion.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Traynor. Is there a discussion on this motion? Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say I won't be able to support the motion, which conflicts with my previous motion. However, I do agree with you on finding 1.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. I also agree with you on finding 1. Happy to look further on Directive 70 to see how we can work on resolving this and making life easier for the audit division in the future so we don't have to be at this position. But I'm splitting. I'm half. So I just wanted to give you an indicator of that, Commissioner Traynor. So are there any further discussion on the motion? Then I will call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, please say no.
No.
No. I have to apologize. I didn't hear, Commissioner Walter, if you voted on the aye earlier.
But I am the other.
Thank you very, very much. The motion passes then with 4 voting in favor, Commissioner Traynor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Walter, and 2 voting against the motion, Commissioner Weintraub and myself. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And I'm committed to working with you all as well on Directive 70 so we don't have to face this issue again.
Thank you. That's going to, I believe that resolves all of our agenda items. So I am going to turn to, I believe it's a question that everybody on the screen has been looking forward to today. No, I want to thank everybody for their patience with working through everything today. I am looking for Ms. Orok, who is our acting staff director at this time. So I will turn to her and ask, Madam Acting Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters that the commission needs to discuss today?
There are no such matters.
Thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.